It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 258 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, we talk with Bob Sally and get an update on what's going on in the Sallyverse, including Salvagers, Jasper's Starlight Tavern, which has just recently concluded a successful Kickstarter, and many other projects that he's working on, including some possible related toys and items that you can buy if you're a fan of his work. We also dive into what else he's got going on, including a special convention, the first one of 2017, which you'll hear about. He's got a lot to say and a lot of advice to give as far as up-and-coming people in the industry, which some people still think he is, but I think he's already arrived. He's only going to get bigger as time goes along as far as making comics and working in the industry. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's always great to talk with Bob Sally, the creator of Salvagers and Jasper Starlight Tavern and good things like that, and got other irons in the fire, too. How are you doing today, Bob?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Wayne.
It's always good to talk with you. I know it's early December, and you've got some things going on that people should know about. Why don't we start out about, do you have a sale that's happening?
Well, it's over now, but there was a pre-sale going on for Jasper Starlight Tavern. Mm-hmm. I did it on Kickstarter, and you know, I kind of went against what I usually like to do. I mean, I tell people all the time, don't ever do a Kickstarter when you haven't given the gifts of another Kickstarter. So obviously, I still have the Kickstarter for Salvagers, the Recreators Part 2 that haven't been delivered yet. Mm-hmm. But we were doing this free webcomic, Jasper Starlight Tavern, and you can see all of our strips. There's over 60 of them, and they're on Facebook if you go to if you search Jasper Starlight Tavern or Starlight Tavern. But there's also the website, www.starlighttavern.com, where we put them all in there. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many people asking me where they could get it in print, and you know, and I always tell them, like, oh, it's a free webcomic. And they've said, like, oh, you know, are you planning on doing it in a print? So finally, I was like, you know what? We have it. So why don't we put it together and offer it as a pre-sale? We set the price low. I mean, it's not like we're making any money. It's already paid for. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to get it out there. I felt like it would be a good way to increase the fan base, mm-hmm. to spread it out there. And I also thought, you know, normally people do Kickstarters for 30 days. I only did this one for 14 days because I wanted to have it wrapped up and get the book to print fast enough that people could have it as a gift for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people who know me always know that I try to do little experiments to see what works on social media. I look at Kickstarter as a social media sales platform. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. I think that there's been articles written that Kickstarter is the third largest comic publisher. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I wanted to kind of give something back. So we weren't asking for a lot. It's a comic with over 50 pages of strips in the intergalactic tavern on the edge of space, where all the intergalactic beings know your name. Mm-hmm. It ties into the Salvagers universe, but it's not the, you know, it's not the serious dark side of it. It's the comedic side of it. There's a busboy who is a Graxon like Brigby. You know, he's got a totally different personality, mm-hmm. And he's fun to write for. But I started doing it because of how long it took me to get an issue of Salvagers out. I wanted to be able to have fun doing something within the Salvagers universe. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, people were asking for it. So I thought if we could do something where we could give it to people and in time for Christmas. Mm-hmm. That would be great. Mm-hmm. And I thought that doing it on Kickstarter would just reach a wider audience. I could have just sold it on my Dirty Planet website, mm-hmm. but I feel like it wouldn't have reached that many people. Mm-hmm. And I probably would have only sold like maybe a quarter of what I did. Mm-hmm. But when people see it on Kickstarter, they tend to think like, you know, this is something I should jump on now. Mm-hmm. And again, I really didn't push it as something where like, hey, I need you to do this. Like I need this to pay the artist. It was an offer. It was saying like, this is something perfect for a stocking stuffer, you know, and we offered t-shirts and flasks. And also there was like five Be in the Comic Strip, and it was successful. I mean, I only was looking for $250. That way I didn't really have to stress about it over November. Mm-hmm. But it went well, and now we're shipping out over 100 books. So it worked well, and I think that whenever I talk about it to people, it's a good litmus test to see like how Kickstarter works, not just as something where you can fund a project, but you can sell a project. You know, you can sell it, even if everything's already paid for, you can use it almost as a newsstand where you can say like, here, I have this comic, and I'm selling it. If it's already paid for, you know, I'd recommend not ramping the price up. You don't need money to pay an artist, so why not try to just sell it, whether you want to make a few bucks or if you just want to break even on it. I always look at it as it's more important to get the books out there. So I would rather keep my prices down, you know, in order to draw more fans in that would buy it. Like, you know, somebody might look at a comic and be like, well, $15, you know, plus shipping, $20 total for a comic book is a little ridiculous. But, you know, if you're then saying like, oh, $8 and $2 shipping, 10 bucks for a comic book, you know, I'll do that. It's an independent comic book. You know, it's 10 bucks. You know, what's 10 bucks? So, you know, it worked out, and I'm looking forward to other projects that we could do on Kickstarter. I know that there's people out there like Russell Nalty who uses Kickstarter. He'll do a project and, you know, say like, I just need a dollar because he just wants to get it funded and he wants to raise awareness for it. And again, Kickstarter's got a lot of people on there who shop. Just they use Kickstarter as a place to shop for independent comics. So, yeah, so that's, you know, not to ramble on about it, but it was what we did. And now people that were looking for that free webcomic, you know, something to probably sit on the top of their toilet, and, you know, it's flip through it. But, you know, it's fun. And again, it's fun to work with Jason Sparich, who's another writer. Juan Cali, who's from Colombia. He's an amazing artist. The tone and his art style for it is perfect. And I think when we found him and what he did, it was almost like when you have that vision of what you want it to look like, and then he does it, and you're like, that's exactly it. But even the look of it is fun, you know. So
very cool. Now let me ask you a question or two. Number one, you wanted 250. Can you say how much you actually got as far as the Kickstarter went?
We got you know, over $2,000 on it.
Wow, good.
In 14 days, you know, and it was good too, because it was, you know, we set prices. Like where I wasn't looking at it like, well, I need to pay people. It was like, well, this is already done and I just need to pay for the printing and the shipping of it. So we were able to keep a price down on it and it was fun. But again, I felt like because I didn't deliver yet, I haven't delivered yet on my last Kickstarter, I didn't really want to push it hard as, hey, you know, please back this.
Well, it's pretty good. Now, for those people who may not have read it, how would you describe this book to people?
Well, I mean, if you imagine a dive bar on the, you know, in the outer rim of the universe, and you could just imagine all sorts of aliens popping through, and we try to, you know, we have cameos from Predator, we have cameos from Star Trek and little Star Wars ones, and you kind of worry where you're like, you know, you're going to get a phone call or a cease and desist letter, but they're just popping through. They're not regular characters. But I think... you know, what the hope is that when you read it, you kind of feel like if you're really into the sci-fi genre, that this is a real place out there that, you know, when the cameras aren't rolling anymore and the credits are done, that these people like are like, you know what, I'm just going to go to Jasper's and grab a drink. And, you know, you could have a Klingon running into, you know, anybody. So, you can, you know, but we finally, you know, we've done skits with Firefly characters and we're really trying to move toward not basing it on those cameos and basing it on other sci-fi stories or characters, because we really want to, you know, we want it to be our own. But like anything, to draw a fan base in, it's fun to put a little one in there. When Leonard Nimoy passed away, I got the art team together, and within 2 days, we had a really nice tribute to him in the bar. So, and again, it's just a lot of fun to work with the people that we're working with.
Well, it's kind of an inside joke, too, kind of thing, is you need to be aware of the sci-fi stuff in order to get the gag. But, exactly. You know, a lot of people are. I mean, it used to be that sci-fi and things like this, you know, people didn't quite get what it was all about. But your book takes advantage of the fact that this is a very well-known genre now and has fun with it and enjoys inside gags on people and inside jokes about stuff that's going on. And like you said, with the Spock thing with Leonard Nimoy, you can do something very meaningful as well as something that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good. I liked it. What I got a copy of. I think I got one of the paperbacks.
Yeah, we did a short run when Boston Comic Con, myself, Jason, and Don were all together. So, you know, this was early in the when we first started doing the script. We only had maybe 20. So we put a little Boston Comic Con booklet together, and we were handing them out for free. And then when we were at C2E2 with Think Alike Productions, I had some extra ones, and I was handing them out as well.
It's what I like to call sci-fi fun.
Yeah. Sci-fi. So you were the one that coined Salvagers as blue collar sci-fi. So now you're coining Jasper Starlight Tavern as sci-fi fun. Yep, I like it.
Go for it. You know, feel free to use it wherever you'd like. It's,
oh yeah, I will.
It's something to to go and do those kinds of things, because I enjoyed it real well. I love the likenesses are pretty obvious. You know who's who, basically. It's not going to be difficult to figure out who these characters are, and that's part of the fun. Part of the fun is to get to enjoy the characters in different settings and to hear them talk about things that maybe they couldn't do in their own, let's say, books or movies or something. So I think you do a great job with it. I really enjoy it. Of course, you probably have to pay a ton of money to be able to make this into some kind of an animated show. But, boy, it would be fun to see that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. It's one of the dreams, you know, that – every once in a while when we post it, you know, we'll post Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, just hoping that maybe they'll take a look and be like, oh, yeah, this is kind of growing some legs. Let's think about it. Maybe they put it on, you know, when they all get together on a board meeting, they say like, well, we got this here, you know, so you never know.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they've got the – what's the name of the show that they have that uses little action figures in the story? I can't remember.
Robot Chicken.
Yeah, Robot Chicken. I'm sure that they're not paying. Well, like, for example, they did a DC Comics special. They had Jeff Johns at New York Comic Con talking about it. They must have gotten permission from them.
Yeah.
If you have a show like that, maybe they could run it like a Robot Chicken setup.
That's definitely a possibility. And, you know, and I've looked into the whole, you know, the law of using other characters. You know, as long as Captain Kirk isn't, you know, a reoccurring character sitting at the end of the bar, you know, you should be okay. But, yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Now, as far as the future of this book, are you going to continue to make web strips of it? How's this going to work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, like, we try to put one out every Wednesday on New Comic Book Day. Mm-hmm. We try to put one out. You can go to – on Facebook, if you search Starlight Tavern, you'll see a little four-armed waitress, Lily. So every Wednesday, we try to pop one on there. We have an Instagram page as well, and then we also update the website so you can get it there. Mm-hmm. But, it is kind of with all the other things that we're writing, and that's one of the reasons why I brought Jason Sparich, a longtime friend of mine. Mm-hmm. I brought him on because I was like, you know, I can't – with all the things that I'm writing and everything, I can't keep trying to write scripts. I'm like, I need some other people to write scripts. So since then, when we've had our colorist, Don Mathias, he's written scripts. Johnny C., who does Sartana, mm-hmm. he's written scripts. I've had Dan Price. You know, he's done – so many other things. He's done a script. He did the script actually with the Flash singing karaoke, which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Cheyenne, I actually was, I had the pleasure of meeting the Flash. Mm. And he loved it. I gave him a copy of it. And he was awesome. Scott Jones is a brilliant man. He's a lot of fun to hang out with.
Cool.
But it's fun to do. But again, it's you know, at the same time, like there's times where you're like, all right, I need to write some scripts. Mm. And you're like, what's funny about being in a bar? Like, what can I do to be like, you know, to have like a moment in a bar? Mm-hmm. And luckily, like in college, I worked as a bartender. Mm. So, you just try to think of like the stupid shit that happened and try to just put a sci-fi twist on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, given the success of this Kickstarter and doing a hardcover, is there another hardcover, maybe more hardcovers in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be, I think for this, it would probably end up being something that would be an annual volume release, just because, again, I mean, I wouldn't want to put another book out that has all the same scripts in it. I'd want to be able to say, okay, this year, at the end of 2017, and maybe we'll do it around Christmas every year, mm-hmm. where people start thinking like, no, Christmas, I'm going to get the next volume of Starlight Tavern. So yeah, so you know, we'd want to have all new scripts. And it's fun because our plan is that we're going to be introducing new characters and reoccurring characters that are original creator-owned characters. Mm-hmm. And then also doing some crossovers with other independent publishers or creators. I'm working with Joe Martino right now about putting one of his characters in there who's kind of like a Thanos character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's sitting at the bar talking to a regular about, you know, how he's going to go take over, you know, this little mud puddle, you know, off in the galaxy called Earth. Hmm. And then there's a news break about this billionaire tycoon who just became the leader of this, you know, the major superpower on Earth. Hmm. And he crumbles up the pamphlet and he's like, he got there before me. So like just little fun things, you know, mm-hmm. It's quick. They're usually like, you know, 4 or 5 panels, if that. And, mm-hmm. Now you move on.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, okay, that's where we are on that. Why don't we move on to Salvagers? Speaking of Salvagers, where's the Salvagers universe at right now? Can you give us an update on what's going on there?
Yeah, so Salvagers, again, we did the Kickstarter for Salvagers. It was very successful. We got about $9,500 for it, which was awesome. And, you know, I always say that the money that we get from Kickstarters, you know, it's not paying my electric bill. You know, it's not paying my heating bill or anything. It goes back into the comic, and it's just smart business that if you want to keep going on, you know, that you build an account that just is for your IP. Mm-hmm. So Salvagers right now, we're producing Salvagers, The Wreck Raiders Part 2. Mm-hmm. We're about 5 pages away from finishing it, which Ooh. We're really excited about.
Wow.
And I had some luck with some people, and we have enough money right now to do Part 3.
Mm.
And again, with some of there was extra funds that were from the Kickstarter that mm-hmm. helped as well. Mm-hmm. So everybody that backed Salvagers, The Wreck Raiders Part 2 mm-hmm. is going to get a free digital copy of Part 3.
Great.
We will, again, because, you know, what we were talking about in February, we will do a Kickstarter for the print version of Part 3. Mm-hmm. But again, because we already have the funds to pay the artists, mm-hmm. it's going to be at low cost, hopefully to get more people on board. So we can spread it out more.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not paying any artists, so we can just kind of do it for fun and, you know, and just get that print run done.
Well, you're in a nice place because a lot of people have to do the whole Magilla. You know, you've got to get the creators paid for. You've got to do the printing. You've got to do the mailing and all that stuff. But you're in a great place if you can just do a Kickstarter, say a low-level one, just like you did for Jaspers. You can do this again for them and just pay for the printing. That's going to make it a lot more attractive to people who may not be able to give a lot of money.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, we probably won't even, you know, and again, there's a lot of things going on. As you may or may not know, Salvagers, we left Think Alike Productions, mm-hmm. and I'm just doing this right now through Dirty Planet Entertainment. Mm-hmm. It was a decision that I made because I feel like there's a lot of people out there, independent creators that are just coming on the scene that really don't know, they don't know the steps to take mm-hmm. in finding an artist. People like when I first came on the scene, I thought like, well, you know, I'm going to write a script. I'm going to send it to Dark Horse Comics. They're going to love it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're going to pay me money and they're going to find an artist and I don't have to worry about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to do with Dirty Planet Entertainment was I wanted to find a few creators that we could get together and almost be like Dirty Planet Entertainment can almost be like a mentor producing company, you know, where if somebody says like, well, you know, I have a script that I want to get done. And by no means am I the first one doing this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to be looking for a profit in doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody comes out and they're like, I have a great idea. I have a script. I'm looking to find, you know, an artist who is willing to do it for, you know, back end money. It's really hard if you're an unknown. It's really hard to do that because artists out there aren't really going to take a shot on that.
Mm-hmm.
You can. I mean, I know people like Kelly Bender, mm-hmm. you know, has had a lot of success doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, like for most of us, we don't really have that luxury, especially if you're somebody that doesn't have anything under their belt.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if a writer can say like, hey, look, I'm represented by Dirty Planet Entertainment. And then that artist can see like, oh, you know, at Dirty Planet Entertainment, They've done some successful Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. They've put out some quality material. That might be something that I want. And also they've gotten other artists a lot of exposure. Mm-hmm. And again, this is all very new, so I'm not sure how it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. But it's a dream of mine to be able to have a house, mm-hmm. you know, per se, mm-hmm. for young creators that don't really know how the industry works to come to, mm-hmm. where they can get advice, mm-hmm. and kind of grow faster than I did. I feel like if that was something that was available back when I started doing comic books, I might be leaps and bounds ahead of where I am right now. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those paying it forward types things where if I can take the knowledge that it took me long to learn and I can give it to somebody and they can excel a little quicker, then imagine, you know what they could do, and maybe we'll get more awesome indie comics from people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I love the new villains in the second series here that you've got going. They're great fun. They're you know, on one hand, they're really nasty, but on the other hand, they're kind of human in the sense that they're flawed, which, of course, the blue-collar sci-fi that you've got, it's great to see villains who are not necessarily, you know, you talk about Thanos-level stuff, but you have your villains in the new group are very much good and bad in some levels, and it's fun to see them because they're going to interact with the salvagers themselves in very interesting ways. I just can't wait to see how this all pans out.
Yeah, and this was actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I started writing the script, I was writing the script that we're doing now for Rec Raiders. This was the first script. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I realized was I'm trying to introduce the main characters, mm-hmm. and I have these villains that are very interesting too. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't working. It was, you know, because it was like there was too many things to introduce to. So that's when I kind of started working backwards, and I was like, I need to introduce these characters, and I need to do it in a way where there's nothing else distracting it. So that's why, as bland as it may seem, putting them on a salvage ship where robots kind of went berserk, it was kind of a cheat for me to be like, I need villains that I don't really need to get into depth with, because the main focus here are the four main characters. Mm-hmm. So using berserker droids, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't have to write any emotion to them. I didn't have to write any personality for them. Mm-hmm. And then moving into the Rec Raiders, you now already know our four characters. Mm-hmm. So now I don't really have to focus too much on them. Mm-hmm. Of course, we are focusing on them, but I can spend more time focusing on the villains. And it was great. I posted the cover for part three, mm-hmm. and somebody had commented saying like how this just goes to show that compelling villains are just as important as compelling heroes. And it was one of those things where it affirms like the your plan, mm-hmm. that at the end of the day, when this Rec Raiders are done, and believe me, they are going to spill into volume three. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, I feel like people are going to be kind of torn to be like, I love the Salvagers, but I really love these Clandorian pirates too.
I was just thinking, you know, you better be careful. You'll have a spinoff on your hands.
Oh yeah, that would be horrible, wouldn't it?
Because you know that'll increase the. You never know. You could end up doing these comic things on a full time basis here if you keep this up.
Well, that's the plan, I think. And most people that are doing the independent comics, they try to think like, how can I make this a full time gig? And mm-hmm. and it's tough, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's such a saturated market out there, mm-hmm. and you really do need to adopt that social media be your baby, because mm-hmm. it's free, mm-hmm. and your audience is out there. You mm-hmm. know, I always say to my wife, when she's looking at her Facebook feed and I'm looking at mine, I'm like, we have two different Facebook feeds. You know, like I don't sit there and I don't see, you know, my friends anymore mm-hmm. with their baby pics or their food pics. Like, you know, I see Joe St. Pierre putting art out there. You mm-hmm. know, I see David Rodriguez putting podcasts out there. Mm-hmm. You know, if I scroll down through my feed, it's all comic book based. Mm-hmm. And it's not just independent, you know. I mean, it's a great place to meet people that are working for Marvel, mm-hmm. DC, and to have that interaction is huge. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that I always said that, again, going to conventions is so important, mm-hmm. because not only are you building a huge fan base, but the separation between beginner mm-hmm. and professional, it's so small. Mm-hmm. I've had Tom Jane come by my table. I met Scott Jones, mm-hmm. Manu Bennett. I went out and had drinks with Manu Bennett. at any point, you could have somebody walk by your table. I met Nick Dragata at Boston Comic Con, mm-hmm. and he and I talked for a little bit. And you know, we just talked about East and West and how much of I'm a fan of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I told him, I'm like, you know, I'm an independent creator too. And he gave me his email address, and he was like, hey, if you ever need any artwork done, you know, hit me up. And it was one of those things. I walked away, and I'm like, you know, he probably didn't really mean it. And but you know what? I took a shot, and I emailed him, and now he's going to be doing the cover for Shelter Division, which is a comic that I'm doing with Source Point Press. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to be huge. You know, I mean, like, I remember being in the car when I read the email. I wasn't driving, mm-hmm. but, you know, but I, when I read the email that he said that he would do it, and I mean, I was screaming because mm-hmm. I was so excited that, you know, I was going to have somebody like him do a cover mm-hmm. for my comic book. Mm-hmm. And then to top it off, he gives my artist, Francesco Tomaselli, this huge, you know, this huge compliment where he's like, you know, I don't know why you want me to do a cover for you when your artist is amazing. So, you know, it's again, it's when you go to conventions, whether you're a fan or an independent creator, you're there with the, you know, the professionals, and they're mostly so cool. Mm-hmm. I very rarely have met any professional out there that's a dick, and mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's because in this industry, if you are, then you're not going to make it around, you know.
Right, right. I'll tell you a quick story, and I don't tell this a lot publicly, but I interviewed Scott Snyder, who was doing Batman. I talked to him just before Batman was going to come out in the New 52. And I talked with him, and he was all really nervous about everything because the numbers were so high, and he couldn't figure out why the numbers were so big and why, how was he going to do all this. He's going to disappoint all these people and stuff. I said, you're not going to disappoint people. We want to see what you're going to do and all this stuff. When he got to the end, he was so encouraged by what we were talking about that he gave me his email, and I started sending him. And he told me, every time a Batman book comes out that I write, I want you to send me an email and tell me what you think of it. And so I've been doing that for – you know, for quite a long time now, ever since Batman number one came out. And I saw him in Baltimore a year or two later. And of course, you know, I don't get much interaction with him. I just, once in a while he'll respond, and I don't want him to. I want him to keep writing, you know. And so I saw him in Baltimore, and I said, you know, I'm having a terrible time coming up with ways to keep saying fantastic and wonderful. And his response was, he looked straight in the eye and he says, you know, he says, I'm not having trouble reading your emails though, he goes. And so I still do that to him to this day. In fact, I owe him one about that. And, you know, it helps when you want to get to interview him about something he's doing or something. I want to say, please let me talk to you. And else the folks who manage these things, oh, he's got a long line. You'll never get in there. And then I go to him, he says, oh, we'll fit you in. Don't worry. And so, you know, when you – and the thing is, I think the point that you're making is the same thing here, is that we always kind of thought that these people who are established or big up there are – on some level above us. But the truth of the matter is they're creators. And if you're a creator, they can relate to what you're talking about. It's not that they're so much higher than they are. In fact, I think it's better that the levels have kind of leveled off, if you want to say that, that we can actually talk to each other a little more realistically and share this kind of stuff. Because before, I hate to say this, but I think that like John Byrne, for example, he had this huge, massive ego that was going on. Nothing against the guy. I love his artwork, but he bought a mansion and he bought a suit of armor and all this kind of stuff. And the thing was, when people came to talk with him, he was just like, you know, he'd look down his nose at you, basically. At least that's the way I heard it. I never talked with him. Yeah. And the thing of it is that I think creators today, because of social media and the stuff like you're doing, we're interacting with people more. We're getting to know them better. We're getting to be more on a realistic basis instead of this crazy, you know, oh, Mr. So-and-so, you know, you're just so fantastic. I just can't believe it. You know, it's much better to be able to talk with them on a realistic basis like you're doing. I think that's why your fan base is growing and probably will continue to grow, because you approach it that way.
Yeah, I mean, and I think in the beginning, I remember when I first started posting pictures on Facebook, and my mom was the only person liking it. And each person that started liking it or talking to me, I was like having a one-on-one conversation about something that is my baby, is my passion. Mm-hmm. And there was never a point, and there still hasn't been, where I'm like, you know what, there's too many people talking to me about it. Mm-hmm. Because the fact that somebody, I mean, it's mind-blowing and it's humbling mm-hmm. that somebody in their day would read something that you put together, mm-hmm. love it so much that they want to talk to you about it, mm-hmm. and that they're excited for the next one to come out. I mean, it's a trip, and it really makes you when you go back to the drawing board and you bring that pen and paper out mm-hmm. to write the next one, mm-hmm. you know, you're like, you think like, I don't want to let any of those people down.
Right.
The next one, I want them to be like, oh man, like that was better than the last one, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It's really them that fuel you, you know?
Oh yeah. Now you brought up something I think we should get into, and that you're talking about Source Point Press. Why don't you talk about, you've got something coming through them. Talk about how that's doing right now.
So Source Point Press, Shelter Division, is something that I was working on. I would call it like, you know, my next baby. I was doing Salvagers, and of course, as you're doing it and it's taking so long for artists to do the pages and everything, you know, as a writer, you're like, oh, I got to do something. And I had this one idea of this kind of like a 300, where it was these people that are being shipped off to Australia. And, you know, there are lives there. But then I had this other idea of, the way I say it is, it's the when the investigated become the investigators. So what we have is in Shelter Division, we have, you know, an immortal mm-hmm. and an immortal who's kind of torn, his body's been torn apart and then, mm-hmm. rebuilt. Mm-hmm. And then we have the son of Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And then the Q, if you will, of the group is the Roswell alien. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I called it Shelter Division, where it's a division of the government, a secret division of the government. And the way it is, you know, it's kind of these beings that are out there, these, you know, like a Bigfoot, a Roswell alien, that have no place in this world. Mm-hmm. And this government agency goes out and finds them. And instead of the, you know, the old school, where we're going to find them and we're going to, you know, we're going to do tests to them and we're going to, you know, do all these experiments on them. They come and they say, like, look, you don't fit in this world. Mm-hmm. So we're going to shelter you. Mm-hmm. We're going to bring you in and mm-hmm. you're going to help us mm-hmm. investigate the paranormal or whatever's weird out there. Mm-hmm. And that's where Shelter Division came. And, you know, you think about the tabloids or the unexplained and all that. Well, that's where, you know, these people come in. Mm-hmm. So I started writing it and I found an artist in Francesco Tomaselli, who's Italian, obviously, and he's amazing. And, you know, he does it all. He, you know, he does the pencils, the inks, the colors. And I took it to Source Point Press. I'm very impressed with how Source Point Press operates. They're a growing independent publisher. They're really out there, like, working hard to get their comics in stores. Mm-hmm. They have such a huge convention presence mm-hmm. that I wanted to spread my wings and I wanted to get in with them. Mm-hmm. So I brought them Shelter Division and they liked it. And right now what we're doing, mm-hmm. I told them, I'm like, I would love just to give it away for free, just to build the fan base. Realistically thinking, it's a new project. Mm-hmm. I'd rather people get it for free. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully by the end, they're like, okay, I like this. Mm-hmm. And then we move on to doing prints. Mm-hmm. But what they're doing right now is they're putting out there a page every other week, every other Wednesday. They're putting out a page on their website. And once it's done, we'll do a print run of it. And then, you know, they'll put it out in cons. You'll be able to get it at cons. And I believe that they'll do the Kickstarter for it. And mm-hmm. people can get it in print.
Wow.
But again, I mean, like Travis McIntyre, I talked to him, and when you come into the industry and you talk to people, you tend to feel like everything you're doing is right, you mm-hmm. know, because everybody's like, oh, that's great. That's great. For Shelter Division, I did up this really nice design mm-hmm. for a logo, and I showed it to him, and I was so proud. Mm-hmm. I was like, check this out. And he's like, yeah, that's great. Too bad we can't use it. And I'm like, what? And he goes, well, no offense. He's like, but when I look at that, he's like, what you're doing is not different. And when I look at that logo, it mm-hmm. tells me that it's not different. Ooh. He's like, we need to come up with something that shows like that this is different. Mm. So, you know, and I was like, that's what, you know, I think like when you get to a certain level, like that's what you need as an independent creator. Mm-hmm. You need somebody to be like
realistic.
Like, yeah, realistic and be like, you know, like this needs to be changed. Like that's not good. Like, because mm-hmm. I think that there's so many independents out there and everybody feels like you have to encourage each other and you do, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. what you're doing out there, it's not for the weak hearted, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's hours spent away from your family. And mm-hmm. and then when you put it out there and somebody's like, well, you're lettering sucks, or you know the coloring's all off, or mm-hmm. you know, you should have done this or that. People don't want to do that because people want to say, like, you know, what you're doing is good, like you're doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many people that talk about doing it, but you're doing it. Mm-hmm. But the way, you know, that Source Point Press looks at it as a business, and they're like, look, if you want people to say, like, hey, you know, pat you on the back because you're doing it, go somewhere else. Like, mm-hmm. but we're looking to put something together where if we don't think that it's right, we're going to tell you that it's not right. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready for that stage. Like, I'm ready to do something and somebody to tell me, you know, okay, that, you know, I see what you're doing there, but it needs to be tweaked, because that's going to make me better. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make me work with artists in a different way. That's going to be like, I'll be able to say to an artist, hey, you know, like, you know, we need to change that. This isn't good enough. Like, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. And realistically, if you're going to grow, like, you need to take that next step. So mm-hmm.
Very good. Now, when is this book going to come out?
Well, right now, the next page will be published on sourcepointpress.com. It's www.sourcepointpress.com. Mm-hmm. And you can always, if you follow them on Facebook or Instagram, I mean, we're going to be pushing that link out. We're 15 pages in, so it's a 23-page issue. And my plan is to have three 22, 23-page issues for the first story arc. Mm-hmm. Right now, I have outlined three different volumes, mm-hmm. fitting a fourth one in. And, you know, I'm going to talk to Source Point Press, because one of the things that they don't like is ongoing series. Mm. One of the things that I really like is ongoing series. I like to build something where it's like, okay, here's a beginning and ending, but it's open to more stories. And I think it's just it's a matter of loving, spending so much time with these characters that you're writing for, that you love them and you don't want to stop writing for them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard. I mean, I'm working on a story right now with Nathan Kelly, and it's called Trexler. Mm-hmm. And when he first came to me, he just wanted me to kind of edit a script that he wrote. Mm-hmm. And as we went through it, he was like, look, can you just write it? And I was like, yeah. So we started writing it. We're one issue done. Mm-hmm. And well, not done. I mean, he's 8 pages into the art, but I finished writing one issue. And I already love the character, and I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, I could, and I'm, again, I'm like, I could write this character all day. Like, I love it. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things, like Source Point Press, they're like, we want to do one story and then move on, or like one story and maybe do a couple issues and then move on. And I can see what they're saying. Like, you know, it's like, they feel like, well, we don't want to keep putting issues out just because fans want to do it, because we're afraid that it might get diluted and we might start putting out things that are not the standard that we look for. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I was like, look, you know, anything that I'm writing, believe me, like, I'm never going to shortchange you. Any writer in the industry, I think that that's the way they look at it. I mean, once you start mailing it in, you just need to hang it up.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these pages coming out on Wednesday as well?
Yeah. So for Source Point Press.
Yeah.
Shelter Division, 2 Wednesdays ago, mm-hmm. they published the first 2 pages of Shelter Division.
Okay.
Wednesday, they'll post another page. And then 2 weeks later, on another Wednesday, they'll post another page. It's to get people sharing their website, mm-hmm. and to kind of slowly get people into it. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, you know, when all of them are posted, I think if you have 10 people that viewed it, mm-hmm. then 2 weeks later, the hope is like, okay, there's another page. So those 10 people, you want, hopefully, say 5 of those 10 people come back to see it. But, you know, those 5 people share it with 5 other people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 25 people. And then you just want it to keep growing. So I always think, like, if 10 people look at your comic, mm-hmm. assume that 3 people liked it. Mm-hmm. But assume that those 3 people that liked it shared it with 10 people. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, out of those 30 people, hopefully 9 people liked it. Mm-hmm. And then those 9 people shared it with 10 people. You know, so we had the same mindset of, let's do this for free and let's post this out there. Mm-hmm. And hopefully people start spreading it out there. Mm-hmm. And it draws awareness to me as a writer, to Francesco Tomaselli as an artist, and to Source Point Press as a publisher.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a really quick story, which just kind of backs up what you're saying. Although I wouldn't encourage this activity. I was talking to a creator in the UK, and he was having real trouble getting people to buy his book. And then suddenly somebody got a hold of the digital copy and put it out there illegally. And what happened was, all these people who downloaded it and read it really loved it, and they started buying the book. And so all of a sudden, you know, he was like, man, I love it when people take my stuff and do it illegally.
It's funny that you say that, because, I mean, I talk to people and somebody says that they're like, hey, you know, I have a comic book and I'd love to get your feedback on it. Mm-hmm. I'll send you a digital copy. And the first thing that a lot of green, like, unexperienced people in the industry say, the first thing they say is, please don't share this with anybody. And I tell them, I'm like, listen, like, just to be blunt with you, you should be telling me to share this with everybody.
That's right.
Digital people that have digital comics, mm-hmm. if they like it, mm-hmm. they're going to turn around and they're going to buy it.
That's right.
They're going to buy a physical copy of it.
That's right.
And if you're new, mm-hmm. And if you have a digital comic, mm-hmm. you want to give that out to so many people. Like, give it out to make a link for it for mm-hmm. free. Mm-hmm. You should be encouraged to give that away. And I tell it to people all the time. They're like, well, you know, I don't want to do that, because on my next Kickstarter, I'm going to put a $3 price tag on the digital version. I'm like, mm-hmm. don't. Like, just give it away for free. Mm-hmm. And then if people like it, they'll share it with people. Mm-hmm. And the more and more that it's shared, the better your chances of building a fan base on it are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if anybody I'm taking this, when I give away my comic for, you know, the digital versions of my comic books, mm-hmm. you know, I don't put a code on it. Mm-hmm. I don't ever tell anybody, like, don't share it with anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm like, most of the time I'm like, hey, if you know anybody, like, pass it around. because usually you're going to pass it around to somebody who's never heard of it. And they're going to be like, whoa, what's this?
Right.
And if you give it away for free and if one person turns around and buys your comic, mm-hmm. that's 100% profit right there.
That's right. It's really cool. Now, I've got two more things to talk about real quickly about. I understand you've been talking about conventions and their importance. You have a big convention coming up, your first one in 2017 is something special. Why don't you talk with us about that?
So yeah, it's February 2017. We are going to Scotland.
Wow.
And very excited about it. I talked to, it's actually a friend of my wife's, mm-hmm. who knows a guy who knows a guy, and mm-hmm. passed along my digital comic. And the guy that does Artist Alley, he offered me a table.
Wow.
And he said to me, he's like, I know it's a long shot because, you know, I can't pay for your airfare. And I talked to my wife, and, you know, we were like, well, we go over there. She's got tons of friends in Scotland. So we usually when we travel over there, we spend a week in England visiting her family, and then we spend a week in Scotland visiting her friends. So we worked it out where I was like, oh, you know, let's go and do it. And, you know, it's a huge step because, I mean, a lot of times, a lot of creators, especially independent creators that are just starting out, mm-hmm. and at times I do think that I'm somebody who's just starting out, you tend to flock to within driving distance. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you're really only interacting with the same people. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, like, the people that I interact with in the Northeast, you know, United States, mm-hmm. they're awesome people. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing one comic, you know, in Framingham, Massachusetts, and you're doing another comic in Boston, Massachusetts, you're really running into the same people, and you want to expand. So this past year when we went to C2E2, mm-hmm. there was a whole new fan base that I was introduced to. Mm-hmm. So now going to England, mm-hmm. you know, where, like I said, God only knows how many people in Great Britain know what I'm doing. And to go to Scotland, I mean, I assume that it's so well traveled because, you know, you think it's the size of a region in the United States. So it's going to be great to expand the title, mm-hmm. and all the things that I'm doing out there. And mm-hmm. and we have a lot of fun things where I have a wrench, a huge, big wrench that we have now, mm-hmm. that you know, that Ray Park was flipping around at Super Mega Fest. Mm-hmm. And by then, I actually have a Brigby puppet that I'm putting together.
Oh.
You know, so we'll have that. I'll have that by the end of the year. So Brigby will be attending all the conventions that I go to.
Cool.
And there might even be a weekly Brigby live session if I can do the ventriloquism.
Mm-hmm.
But it might, you know, the way I do it, I don't know. It might come up lame and I might be like, I can't do it. But but it's going to be fun. It's going to be amazing. I love Scotland. I'm very excited to meet fans from a different area, mm-hmm. because you just, you know, I think it's one of the things that independent creators talk about when you talk about going somewhere. Like, I went to Cheyenne and people were like, how are the fans out there? I'm like, they were awesome. They're really into it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. And again, to start off 2017 in February, usually cons don't really start until March. Mm-hmm. So to start in February, it's fun. You know, it's going to be a good kickoff.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you can now say you're an internationally known indie comics creator.
Well, you know, Think Alike Productions, Salvagers isn't with Think Alike Productions anymore, but they did a great job with Comixology. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things where it was a major strength of theirs. Mm-hmm. And when I would get my reports, it would show you, you know, where your comic was sold. And it was great just to see the different places. I actually sell my comics on my big cartel site. Mm-hmm. It was a couple of weeks ago. I got an order from Croatia. And I was just, you know, I was floored. I was like, Croatia, like, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine, like, I don't even know how the person found it. I guess, you know, social media is, it's amazing how it works.
But, you know, because on the other hand, though, if Comixology, you have the same shelf space that Action Comics has. That's something I would like to say.
Absolutely.
You can, you know, people go into, and there's been many times when I've looked through Comixology and there's stuff I don't have any idea what it is, but it looks interesting to me. I like the description. It might only be a couple dollars, maybe even a dollar, and you get to try it and you get hooked on the book if it's well done. So, you know, that's a great thing about it. Doing Comixology, I always encourage people. Some people want to stick specifically with print copies, but I say no. Get Comixology out there. Even if you don't make a lot of money, you're still going to get exposure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something like that. So now, one other question I want to talk with you about. You've been referring to your books as baby, and this is your new baby. But you actually have another baby in your life. Do you want to talk a little bit about her?
Well, I got him. I got two. I got my 3.5-year-old daughter, Josephine, okay. And we just had a little boy, wow. Robert James, wow. Sally, and he's 4 months old, and he's a lot of fun. I mean, he's just starting to grow a little bit of a personality, you know, laughing and rolling over and everything. So cool. It's amazing. You know, it's a lot of work, though, too. You know, you see people in the industry, the independent industry, that are just excelling, and you're like, yeah, they don't have kids. You know, they don't have family. Like, they, you know, I always look at Dirk Manning, you know, and he's like the tops, man. He's out there doing it every day, and life on the road. He's always somewhere, and I look at it, I'm like, oh, you know, it's one of those things. I think, like, when it was funny, I did do a golf reference, mm-hmm. when Tiger Woods was killing it, mm-hmm. Phil Mickelson said, he was like, yeah, wait until he has a wife and a kid. Mm-hmm. I would be doing it too, you know. If I was single, I would be out there hustling and going to all the cons. But you know, it's tough, you know, when you're away, mm-hmm. and you miss them. Like, you know, you got to do it, but when you're away, it's you're away from your family. And then so many people do that. There's so many creators out there. Anybody listening, when you're at a convention, when you see the people that are on the other side of that table, 9 times out of 10, those people are taking that time not only to hustle their book, but they're taking that time away from their family. So support indie comics. It's a grind. It's mm-hmm. such a hard grind.
That's really kind of cool. And I did have to mention, too, I saw you recently put up a picture of yourself in this winter hat. Looks like a like a Russian kind of a thing. I've seen these people in Russia wear those kinds of hats. So you guys must have a lot of snow up there in the northern regions.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no snow yet. It's just freezing. It's just cold. Okay. And my wife bought me that hat, when I looked at it, I was like, "There's no way I'm gonna wear this hat." I put it on, and I was like, "You know what? I'm just gonna own it. I'm just gonna wear this hat constantly." And I do. I love it. So
see, now what you do is you get one for her and one for each of your kids, and when you go out, you're this little hat clan kind of.
That's it. Well, she did do that. I mean, my son has a little. Yeah, my son has a little Batman hat. You know, my daughter has like a little cat hat. It's you know, when you're out here, and that's why I say, I'm like, when you have two kids and you're a husband, you can look ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Now, one more thing I wanted to mention to you. I want to go back to the Jaspers because I didn't ask this question. I meant to. Let's say you didn't order the hardcover through the Kickstarter. Is there a way to get that? Is there another way to get that from you through the website? How would people get that?
Yeah, you can get all my comics, even Three Swords, which I did with Ruben Romero. Mm-hmm. You can get those at www.dirtyplanet.bigcartel.com. Mm-hmm. Because it's not a part of the Kickstarter, you'll get it for a little less money, not much, but mm-hmm. you're not going to get your name in the executive producer page, mm-hmm. and you don't get all the little bells and whistles that comes with it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can go there. You can buy the Jasper Starlight Tavern. You mm-hmm. can buy all the issues that I have of Salvagers. Mm-hmm. You can buy Three Swords, and you can buy some T-shirts. And mm-hmm. I'm always trying to put up some more merchandise on there just to mm-hmm. make it look good.
Well, that's good. Well, it sounds like all your characters might turn into little plush toys or puppets or something. You never know what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's one of the fun things. Like, when you go to a convention and you see people making toys, you're like, hey, I got characters I want to make a toy of. So I need to do my action figure line first.
Yes, that's true. The Salvagers action figure line. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Be good. Well, Bob, as always, you're doing wonderful stuff, and I don't have to tell you to keep doing it because I know you will. And I can't wait to see the next stuff you keep coming up with because it's always great fun and great reading. And I hope someday you get to do this full time, and maybe some company will come along and discover you and be able to pay you for all this good stuff, and you don't have to come up with the money yourself. And we depend on people through Kickstarter and stuff like that, although it's a great way to do it, and you're proving it can be done. So, again, keep it up, Bob, and, you know, looking forward to the stuff you're going to do.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode. Be back next week when there'll be plenty more to talk about in the comics universes. But until then, keep reading your comics.